All right, what's up, guys? I'm Garrett Marchesano, and this is the MMA Rundown brought to you by FanDuel. We're going to go over one MMA trending topic and then move on to the next one. Today, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, former Season 18 Ultimate Fighter champ, Chris Holds It Down.
What's Holdsworth. Up?
Let's go. All right, first topic we got to cover is a recap of the UFC Fight Night happened last weekend. We'll go over a few of our locks and, of course, talk about the main event. First one up is Pantoja.
Pantoja.
Got the sub against Roy Vall. This was a
crazy fight.
A long shot. You know, a couple of Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belts. And he was really getting his ass kicked the first round and the second round. And he pulled out a nasty rear naked choke. But tell me what you think about this fight when it started. You're thinking about your lock. Chris's lock was Pantoja by submission, which was a long shot.
Yeah, so I don't know if he was getting his butt kicked, but it looked like he was gassing a little bit because, yeah. You know, Roval was just able to keep that pace going. He kept that pace, he kept it up, and it looked like Pantoja was starting to die down. Yeah. And, you know, then Brandon started landing all his shots. He started, you know, get off some good strikes. But man, that rear naked choke, how he got to his back and locked in that rear naked choke, dude, that was sick.
Yeah. So tell me, he got the leg lock, and then I was surprised. I mean, from the outside, it's easy looking in. Yeah. And, we don't know how gassed these guys are, but he was like, I felt like he wasn't trying to fight the hands. He was kind of just letting it go. Was he trying to get maybe the leg lock off of him or something?
Yeah, I didn't really feel like he was fighting the hands good either. You know, like sometimes guys are so focused on escaping or trying to like throw the guy's hooks out, they forget about their neck.
Yeah.
And so I think the number one thing is you have to protect the neck. You know, like Wu-Tang says, protect your neck. All right. So fight the hands, two on one, try to get the arm around the head, get your hips, your shoulders to the mat, and try to peel him off your back. If not, if you're doing something with the hooks down here, your hands are occupied, and where are your hands at? They're not close to your neck fighting the hands. So Pantoja, being the black belt, being the vet he is, he was able to weather that storm, you know, show his conditioning, you know, take some shots, be in some, you know, some vulnerable positions, but come out with the victory.
Yeah.
Come out with the finish.
Yeah, with the sub finish. And, you know, these are two high-level guys, two Brazilian black belts, you know. So this is high-level movement on the ground. And another one thing I want to ask you about is, so he had the rear naked choke, but it was around the chin, right? So his arm was around the mouth.
Yeah.
But he was getting tighter and tighter and squeezing. And then it's almost like Roy Vall was like, he knew that he was about to get finished like that, so he had to give him his neck to get that little breath. And then right when Pantoja got the neck, it was like a rattlesnake, right?
Yeah, for sure. That was a nice palm-to-palm. My old coach used to call it the Severin choke because Dan Severin was choking people out with that back in the old days. But it's one of my favorite ways to finish the rear naked strangle and to actually just hold people there and crush their face and crush their jaw.
Yeah,
I think he was crushing it. And what's going to happen, you either lift your chin and then it sinks in the choke, or you get your face crushed and you tap out anyways.
Yeah.
It ends up being a choke, but it's like a jaw and face crush as well.
Yeah, that was
so
crazy.
I learned real quick back in the day. I thought like a rear naked choke should be like perfectly under the neck. Then, you know, I went to Las Vegas and started training with those guys from Cobra Kai, and they were choking me all across my face. And I was like, all right. I learned real quick. So I was like, I'm choking people's faces too.
Love it, love it. Yeah, that was sweet. We all know that was Chris's FanDuel lock of the week, so we have to give him a little kudos there. So I'm wondering if anyone rode with that pick, they made some good money, even if they bet $20. That was a 14x multiple. So we get some right, huh? And the next one for Garrett's lock of the week, I had Madsen. You know, unfortunately, our guy Clay Guida, I thought he was going to be able to edge out the decision win. And I ended up being correct on that pick as well. It was a split decision, super close fight. I don't think anyone would be too mad if it went either way. And Clay, man, I just heard Joey Rodriguez the whole time, home run, home run. And every time later would come a massive overhand right, or he was doing this leaping in left hook with plenty of power on it. So tell me about those power shots. Obviously, they saw something in Madsen's game where they thought they were going to be able to land one of those.
Well, Madsen wasn't able to take us down at all, you know, like being the Olympian wrestler he is. You know, Clay showed that his wrestling is no joke either, his MMA wrestling. But, you know, they were saying, Madsen control, maybe just a little control against the cage. He was able to land some good jabs on Clay.
Yeah,
I thought Clay landed the harder shots. I thought he landed some good leg kicks. So, you know, sometimes, you know, when it's a split decision, I've been on both sides of it. I've been on the side of, like, your fighter winning a split decision, and it was super close, and maybe, like, it could have went the other way. But then I've been on the losing side of things where it was a split decision and, you know, it could have went your way. So it definitely sucks anytime you lose. But, you know, being a fighter and, you know, training with these guys, like, you know, going in there, you can't leave it in the hands of the judges. Mm-hmm. You got to go out there and try to finish these fights. And if you don't, there's always a possibility, you know, you can get it stolen from you by the judges.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. And for Clay, when you talk about credibility in the promotion and the industry, Mattson's great. He's on his ascent, and he has a lot of, you know, his wife had cancer or still does and is fighting through it. So he has a lot to fight for with his family and what he's doing. So I'm happy for the guy.
Oh, yeah, I'm happy too.
Clay in the loss, I'm happy for him too. He had a hell of a fight. His stock doesn't go down at all. It was cool to see all the respect that the UFC was giving him the past 2 weeks and his promotions and all those burping videos that were coming out.
Yeah, gave him love, right?
Gave him a lot of love. I mean, the views on those videos were millions, and they posted it like 3 or 4 times. And the UFC, Dana White, Sean Shelby, can't wait to get Clay back in that octagon. They had him as a co-main event, and he entertained. He put on the entertainment for everyone watching. So the fact that they put him at a co-main, that's the respect they have for Clay. They know he's bringing the entertainment. So good on Clay. Good fight. I can't wait to see him get back in there.
Yeah, me too.
So lastly, of course, we have to talk about the main event. And on this one, we were both pulling for the dog, Chris and I, on this one. We wanted Kelvin Gastelum to pull out the win. He showed up. He was pushing the pace. He was fighting. But Cannonier ended up getting that decision victory. So watching the fight, Chris, what was your thought as the fight went along? And how do you feel Kelvin, you know, should have switched it up to get the W?
Man, Calvin came out really good and really hard, and you know, the first couple rounds looked, you know, really good, and they were close rounds. Maybe he started to die down a little bit. Yeah, or I think, you know, Cannonier was just landing the harder shots.
Yeah.
He landed some good shots, and you know, sometimes you don't recover from those. And you know, he had really good kicks up the middle. He had really good stance switches, and and those hooks that he was landing when Calvin was coming in. Man, I was impressed with Cannonier, and just his full mixed martial arts game was on display, and was able to, you know, drop Calvin, or it looked like dropped him a couple times. I don't know if Calvin fell. You know,
that one was kind of sketchy. Kind of fall. Like, it could have been a fall.
But you know, you can't finish that guy. You know, he keeps coming back and
never,
you know,
finished.
He's tough as they come, so you know he'll be back.
It's that big old head on him. Yeah, I can't wait to see him back too, and he's in good spirits. Another one of those, it could have gone either way. But I saw a big turning point in the fight, and I want to hear from Chris what the team was seeing. You know, Kelvin was kind of doing this jab, leaps. He gets on the inside, and then once he's on the inside, he's got that huge left, right?
Yeah.
So he can either throw a straight or a hook, depending on where Cannonier is. And their coaching, the quarterman, saw this. So I heard him, they were begging for the check right hook on the way in. And then I saw Cannonier throw that for like the remainder of the fight fiercely, and he landed it a couple times. And so then, like, Kelvin couldn't get on the inside anymore. And I was hoping he would, like, keep up those calf kicks and leg kicks. So those are some fierce ones. Later in the fight, I don't know if he was getting fatigued, he stopped throwing them. You know, he starts throwing his hands more. And so that was a brilliant corner move to have Cannonier just keep throwing those check right hooks. So they just knew that Kelvin was coming in, time it with a check right hook. And that really minimized some of Kelvin's game. What do you think Kelvin should have done to kind of negate that, counter that?
And that's the good thing about having, you know, the right corner men, is like they can make those in-between calls, or, you know, during the fight calls that you're not able to see or adjust to, but we can see it on the outside, and just those little things can just shut down someone's game. Man, you know, what do I think Calvin should have done? It's hard to say, you know, because, like, you know, I think he tried everything. You know, he tried to take you know, Cannonier down, and he was almost successful a couple times, but I think Cannonier just being so big,
strong,
you know, being that coming down from heavyweight, going to light heavyweight, and, you know, finally, you know, coming down to his real weight class, he's just hard to take down. His hips are just so good, and he's an athletic guy, so, man, guys like that are really hard to take down. So if I were to say what Calvin should have done differently, maybe added in a little bit more of the level changes. He tried a couple times, and he was almost successful. But maybe not enough. Like, he didn't try the level changes and get Cannoneer thinking enough to really expose some of his wrestling.
Yeah, he would always shoot, and he pushes him against the cage. Yeah. And then when they started grappling against the cage, Cannoneer would kind of take over.
Yeah,
and I was like, I was hoping Kelvin was going to get him to the ground off the cage, but Cannoneer was just
too strong. He's legit, man.
Yeah, he is legit for sure. So he's right up there in a top contender spot. We'll see if he fights someone next. I know he really wanted that Paulo Costa fight, so we'll see what happens with that next matchup and where he goes. But he's right up there for another title shot if seeing what happens with Izzy and Whitaker next. All right, let's jump on to the next topic. We've got Brendan Schaub saves a kid's life in a car crash. So we all know Brendan is from The Fighter and the Kid. He has his Below the Belt podcast as well, Food Truck Diaries. He's got a bunch of shows going on. Former UFC fighter, heavyweight, and kind of crazy trending topic. I've always liked Brendan. I was an early adopter of the podcast, listened to it for a long time, and I love Brian Callum. He's freaking hilarious to me. But in this situation, this topic we're talking about here, he was on his way to dinner with his wife, Brendan was, with his family. He noticed a car crash on the side of the road that involved a car and an 18-wheeler.
Damn.
And he noticed that standing next to the car was a little kid waving his arm saying, help, help. The car was completely mangled. It was a head-on crash on the opposing traffic with a semi. There was one guy on the scene, and Brendan says he thought it was a truck driver. And from Brendan, he said, I thought it was a truck driver, but I'm not sure. But me and him were the first ones on the scene. There's two kids, and there was a bigger kid. And he keeps going, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. And Brendan said back to him, you're not going to die, buddy. You're not going to die. I tell the guy to back up. So I grab the door, and it's mangled from the car crash. It's intertwined with the car. After he broke the glass from the car, he's able to pull the rest of the kids out. And he looked in the front seat and saw clearly that the mother was dead in the seat right in front of her kids. And he kept telling the kids not to look in the front seat. Don't look at your mother. Don't look at your mother. The kids keep on asking, how's my mom? Where's my mom? The father ended up fleeing the scene. The other man, when he pulled up, was actually the father, who was later charged with murder and child abuse. So he was convicted that, I don't know if he fully admitted it or not, that he went on the freeway and purposely drove on the other side of the freeway to go head on and was trying to kill his whole family. End up only killing the mother, and then everyone else got injured. So crazy. Kudos. You know, a lot of people would drive by an accident like that. Brendan pulled over, you know, broke the glass, pulled the kids out, helped the kids with, which is going to be the most traumatic time of their life. And, you know, this is going to be a moment that they have to live through forever. So it's hard to give your thoughts on this, Chris, but you know Brendan. What are your thoughts on some crazy situation like this? And of course, kudos to Brendan for getting out and doing something.
Yeah, it just shows the type of person he is. You know, like you said, most people just drive by and, you know, they got, especially nowadays when everyone's so caught up in their own life and what they're doing next. So, you know, kudos to Brendan for, you know, saving those kids. You know, it's going to be good karma coming back to him. I'm a big believer in karma and doing good things and having good things come back. That's why I carry this little glass breaker on my keychain, just in case I ever do get into a car crash. Like, I can just press it against the window, and it'll just shatter.
I saw that. Because
you never know, like, what kind of situation, or if I have to do that to break somebody else out in this type of situation. Because, you know, I'm not going to use my elbow, and, you know, like, glass is kind of hard to break.
I wonder how he broke it.
It's good to be prepared and to, you know, to have a good mindset to, you know, always being willing to help.
No, I completely agree. And, you know, Brendan screw has a lot of
dad,
haters,
man. Screw that dad. Yeah,
like, I know that dad. Screw that dad 100%. And it's super sad for the kids. And Brendan has a lot of haters out there, and he has a lot of clout. So you're going to get with all these podcasts and social media, and he's in the headlines a lot. And this is a great press on him. Kudos to him. You know, for people listening, send a at Brendan Schaub and thank him for what he did. I don't care who you are. You know, if you do something like this, you deserve a lot of credit and a lot of good karma. And for myself, I've never been in an accident in my life until the last 2 weeks. I've been in two car accidents. Both I was the passenger in the car.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I swear. Two car accidents the last 2 weeks. One was with my buddy Tyler, who was in downtown Sacramento, and we were driving through a construction zone, and we had a lady run a stop sign.
Wow.
Asian lady ran a stop sign, clipped us and totaled her car. and nearly totaled my buddy's car. And so we were not at fault, and he just had that lady's insurance cover all the repairs on his car, plus some extra cash. Little whiplash we got, and it wasn't too bad, but it made me think, like, holy shit, because I've gone through my whole life kind of invincible in the car arena.
Yeah, not me. I've been in a few accidents, bro. Shit.
So you know what it's all about. Yeah. But it kind of took away, like, holy shit, I could get in a serious accident. This is no joke. And what really scared me, it was nothing we did. It was just lady who blew through a stop sign hit us. Second one was just this weekend, Saturday, stop and go traffic driving from Bay Area down to Sacramento. And it's stop and go, stop and go. We press on our brakes. It's a big stop. I'm like, all right, let's make sure you watch traffic. I'm looking at my fiance, Ashley. And right as I look over at her to tell her to be careful, I'm like, hey, we got to be careful. Whack! Boom, we get hit by like 20 miles an hour from someone behind me. New car I just bought 7 days ago. Schwack, just in the back. And it felt a lot harder than it was because the damage wasn't too bad. Just messed up my bumper a little bit. And the car that hit us blew out their front headlights and blew out their bumper. And she was like, I'm so sorry. I got distracted. And I turned around. You guys were right in front of me. And it was this older lady, probably 65 or something, all distraught. So I was like, it's okay. I'm just happy you're all right. We sorted it out. And now we just contacted the insurance company. They're buying us a new bumper and plus $500 or whatever. I'm like, God, I just went through this shit 2 weeks ago.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy. Car accidents are so unfortunate.
Any bad ones for you? Totals or anything like that?
Oh yeah, my first car, man, I've been rear-ended a couple times.
Yeah.
Where I went through the whole like chiropractor and, you know,
yeah,
try to get paid out of it because my back was messed up.
Yeah.
And then this young kid, I was like just coming back from this thing, and I was driving and I went through a green light, and this kid like pulls over. He's in front of me. He goes through the light first, pulls over, and then whips a Yui like right in front of me.
Oh gosh.
And I don't know if he just didn't see like I was like here, and he like pulls over like he's pulling over, but then he pulled over just to get a wider Yui.
And just right.
But bro, it was like right in the middle of the main street where we're going 35 miles per hour. So like I didn't have any time to like boom.
You just hit him right.
Pretty much like hit his back end and spun him out. And that was my first car. I told that car.
Oh, okay.
And just little ones like that. So I've been in a couple of, like, scary situations before.
But it's scary to think that how, you know, we're fortunate that, you know, we're all good, right? I can see now how these accidents can turn into
so
breaking
quick.
An arm, leg, killing someone.
Yeah.
And, God, it's crazy. So happy that most of that family's okay. It's unfortunate. I wish it was the dad that would have went, not the mom. So that's extremely sad. And for those kids, I hope they get some good help and psychological help. I know the dad is going to go to jail for the rest of his life, prison, and I hope the kids are going to get through it. And God, rest in peace to their mom. Thankful to Brendan Shaw for helping them out, right? All right, let's move on to the next topic here. Change up the mood a little bit. We got Michael Bisping and Conor McGregor. I've been going back and forth for the past week. This is really comical to me. I'm a huge Michael Bisping fan. He's really funny. And on the other side, we got the biggest shit talker in the promotion, right? Conor McGregor, right? So Conor called Michael Bisping a nobody. This comes after Michael Bisping was talking a lot of trash about McGregor, telling him to go win a fight, and was trying to stir up some drama. He was talking over his podcast. And so Conor kind of responded to that. Bisping responded and said, I don't know what's getting deleted quicker, Conor's tweets or his legacy.
Oh,
because Conor has done a lot of tweet and deletes.
That's a heater.
And then Conor responded back, the only legacy I give a F about is the legacy 5000 my mother flies around on. And then he had a picture of Michael Bisping on an airplane with his mask on. And they've been going back and forth over the past week. Yeah, Conor brought up an old story about how Michael Bisping spent some time in jail and that he had some legal stuff going against him, and he had to leave to come to America when people were coming after him for some legal stuff. And this is some stuff that's like 23 years ago. But of course, Conor's trying to talk crap and bring up some personal stuff. And then let's see, Bisping's response was, it's funny because Conor has no banter. He just goes straight for the personal stuff. And then later said, rest up and keep my name out of your mouth, pal. So, you know, Conor's not going to beat Bisping on this. And Conor's really been on a spree where anyone who's been talking trash about him. Daniel Cormier, Michael Bisping, he's been going, Diego Sanchez, he's been going after all of these guys. So it's kind of hilarious. It's pure comedy to me. He's staying relevant. And, but these guys have a right to talk a little bit. You know, he's 1-4 in his last 5 matches, and he talks like he, you know, he's the goat of the promotion. And yeah, he makes a lot of money, so he rests on that a lot in the debate. So it is what it is. What's your thought on this feud between Michael Bisping and Conor McGregor?
Man, you know, like, going for the personal stuff is just, like, out of my...
Yeah.
I feel like the personal stuff, the family, is out of bounds. You know, you can talk about my facial features, yeah, or, like, you can talk about how I look, or, you know, me getting beat up in a fight, or whatever it is, my horrible technique. But you can't talk about my family, man, or, like, my mom, or... like, yeah, I forget the quote Chiesa, you know.
Yeah, don't you ever talk about my mom.
Yeah. So Connor's known to go after the jugular.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of that type of trash talk. I like, you know, smart banter, like, you know, talking that it's funny and you know, that you kind of like makes it, you know, it makes sense and it's funny and it's about them. But, like, the personal stuff is not funny to me. It's, like, more of, like, ooh, like, man, like, you're talking about someone's, like, personal life. Like,
yeah. Him digging up the legal stuff and him talking about Dustin's wife. Yeah, he goes just – and what's really surprising me is that no one has gone bad on him and talking trash about Dee Devlin. And
yeah. You know,
they could go – she's,
well, I think they're not as low as that. Yeah, you know what I mean? They're like, wow, can I snoop? Well, should I snoop? Can I do that level, or should I stay classy and just stop it at, hey, rest up, keep my name out of your mouth, like, or
yeah,
else you're gonna get punched next time I see you, kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah, that's what they all say.
Bisping like socks him.
That'd be a good one. Bisping versus Conor in a boxing match post UFC. Yeah, it's interesting. He's gonna stay stooping in these lows. And it's weird because you see him in interviews outside of it, and he's still a gentleman to a lot of people. He is helping out a lot of charities, doing a lot of good. I think he thinks that this is just the way to stir up the most stuff. And
it's working. Look, we're talking about it, right? No one's talking about
the next UFC fight.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's doing whatever it takes to stay relevant.
Yeah.
And is it my forte? No. Is it yours? Probably not.
No.
But at the same time, like, we're talking about it, and everyone else is probably talking about it, so.
You're right. There is something to it. All right, we'll move on. Let's jump on to the next topic we got here, second to last one. New fight booking. Really happy about this one. Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah, bantamweights. Let's go.
Aljamain Sterling is now booked against Petr Yan, the rematch we all wanted, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people have been criticizing Sterling for the way he won and the way he's shown off the belt, because it was a disqualification that got him the belt. Rightfully so, though. So, you know, there's a little bit to that. A lot of people had him down in the fight, you know, I think it was 3-1, expecting him that he was about to lose that fight. You know, he was
the rounds. I thought so, too.
But Sterling's response was tough shit. Don't cheat, and, you know, we'll have a fair fight, and you can try to win the belt the right way. And, of course, Peter, he's the shit talker, too, and he's stirring it up in the right way, and he says, I'm going to go out there and dominate. I said I was going to dominate him. I actually do believe the second time I will, and I'm going to do just that. So we'll see. This is the same card with Jan Błachowicz and Glover Teixeira. The rumors are that TJ Dillashaw will likely get the winner of this matchup, because he does have an 8-month recovery he's going through right now with his knee and getting banged up from that Sandhagen fight. So it could. The timing could be perfect to fight the winner of this, maybe early next year. So interesting back and forth. When you heard that this is being booked, what's your initial feelings?
I want to see it. Yeah. Like, you know, no one likes the way it ended, right?
Yeah.
No one likes the way, you know, Sterling won that fight. And any true mixed martial artist knows that, you know, Jan was winning at that point. Yeah. Of course, anything could have happened in the remaining of the round, in that last round. Don't take that away from him.
Yep.
But the way things looked, it looked like Sterling was dying down a little bit, and it looked like he didn't have the output. You know, Jan was, you know,
sharp.
He still looked fresh in the first or second round. And Sterling came out good the first round. I was like, oh, man, this is going to be a good fight.
High pace.
But I felt like, I don't know if the conditioning was a factor, and he started to feel that in the second and third, or if Jan just is like, you know, figured him out. And it looked like he figured him out. It looked like he felt what he was doing, and he made some adjustments, and he was able to capitalize on him. And, yeah, of course, you know, I don't think Jan was cheating per se.
It was in the moment.
It was in the moment, fighting. Man. Like, things happen. But, you know, he got the consequences.
He lost his belt?
Yeah. So can't really say too much.
Yeah, his latest tweet was, "Time to return what's mine. No games with my prey this time." So he's coming in as the favorite in this fight against the champ, Aljamain Sterling. This is still going to be a close fight. Aljamain does have the benefit of learning how that fight, you know, he probably won those first two rounds because he was landing more shots, had more output, or maybe at least one of them, maybe both of them. But it looked like it was going downhill fast to where Jan was about to sweep the rest of the fight and win. Or I started feeling like he was going to finish him, too,
because his punches were sharp. Him, yeah.
Sterling was getting tired. It looked like desperation was hitting. He was going for a lot of takedowns. So let's say, you know, it's October 30th. This fight's coming around.
He got kneed when the knee was down, right? That's what it was.
When his knee was down. Yeah. When his knee was down.
So, of course, that's not called for. But, man, like, because I've been kneed when I've been down, and that shit's not cool.
I bet.
You know what I mean? So, like,
no, I don't think anyone can justify hating on Aljamain. He had the option to fight on. The ref gave him that 5 minutes, and he could have fought on. I don't blame him, especially he was down in the fight. He knew it. He was hurt. He got a concussed off that. That was a major knee to the head. So coming in this fight, two questions for you, Chris. How would you change up your game being Aljamain Sterling, and who's going to end up winning this fight and how?
I think Aljamain needs to have a good mix of what he did in that first and second round, but just be either be able to keep up that pace or slow things down 10%, still win the round, and be able to keep that pace later in the fight. Because, like you said, those first two rounds, he looked great. You know, he had a very high output. He was landing shots, but he started to die down a little bit, and Jan started landing those harder shots, and he started, you know, I felt Sterling started to get sloppy. Like, started going for sloppy takedowns and stuff like that. So he needs to keep that pace up. He needs to do what he did in that first and second, or maybe just tone it down just a little bit. And he might have learned from the fight in general, like, oh, man, like, Jan, he's better here than I thought. Like, maybe I need to do this differently. And only he's going to be able to know, him and his coaches are going to be able to know that, because he's the one who felt it and
felt what was working
and what wasn't working. So, you know, when you fight someone, I know every time I either had a match or if I roll with somebody, the first roll, sometimes I don't do my best because, like, I haven't figured them out yet. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I always feel like once we roll the first time, I kind of figured you out, and each time after that is going to be worse. Yeah. So, like, that could be here, too. He might be able to figure some things out and, you know, change a couple things up and, like, all right, well, I knew this worked, so I'm going to continue to do that. Instead of guessing that this was going to work and it got shut down, you're like, damn, I'm not going to do that again, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it is interesting. They both, you know, we're able to feel each other out. They felt each other's power. They felt each other when they, you know, were grappling together. Who's going to control each other on the cage? And it was a good matchup. I was really enjoying the fight. But at the end of the day, I think Peter Yan is the superior striker, strong guy for his size. Even though Aljamain is bigger aesthetically, Peter Yan is strong for how he is at that bantamweight division. So I think Aljamain's still going to be hard to finish. I think he's going to watch his stamina a little bit. So I think it's going to be Peter Yan by decision to take his belt back. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. I think he's going to win this by decision. And if it goes the same way that it did before, where, you know, he starts winning those later rounds, I can see him finishing him in the fourth or fifth.
I agree with that too. Man, I think we're on the same page. All right, let's move on to the next topic and last topic, I believe, second to last here. We have Zhang Weili says, and this is something that I don't want to harp on this too much, because a lot of great fighters out there, when they lose, they're looking for why they lost. And they're looking for, some of them, it's hard not to fall into an excuse.
Yeah.
And a lot of them take it on the chin and would never bring up an excuse. And this reminds me of the Wilder fight where Fury versus Wilder where he blamed it on that 40-pound suit that he walked out of. Remember that?
Yeah.
He was like, that suit, I was tired in the first
my
round.
My legs were tired. My calves were tired.
The suit was too heavy. And I just felt like he was searching for something to find to justify his loss. That's, I feel, a little bit's happening here. Zhang Weili said over this past weekend, the Chris Weidman fight really affected my mindset. I touched gloves with him when he left, and just thinking about of losing focus for even that, she said, for 0.1 seconds could throw off the whole fight. This is a cruel sport. And she said that it really threw her off to not want to fight and felt bad for him. I was thinking about Chris and concerned for him. And then she's going in there to fight Rose, right? We all know who that, how that ended up. She got TKO'd and lost that fight. Weidman does a weekly podcast now, so of course when anyone brings up his name, he's going to give a response to you now. His response was, yeah, I gave her the bad juju, Weidman said. He's joking around. But he said, I mean, listen, that was a super traumatic moment for me, and I think anybody who watched it, the people in the stands and stuff, Weidman, and he said it was super traumatic for me, and I think it was also for anyone who watched it, the people in the stands and stuff. Weidman also suggested that his misfortune shouldn't be used as an excuse for any other fighter. And so, of course. So what are your thoughts? Yeah, this is searching for that excuse. She was really put on a high pedestal by the UFC, really well represented for her country. She lost to a great mixed martial artist in Rose, and there's no excuse other than that Rose has hands and she got caught. So what are your thoughts on the kind of these excuses in the combat sports arena and then for hers specifically?
I think it comes from just that competitive spirit, because I know like a lot of times when either I've done something stupid or, you know, either when I've lost in a grappling match or whatever it was, I've lost in whatever, I'm always thinking about why I lost. Yeah. And I'm not trying to think of an excuse. Maybe your ego is trying to think of an excuse.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think of, like, what did I do wrong? Like, what could have made me, like, why did I throw up this morning? What did I eat last night? Like, oh, it was this. I'm never eating that again. You know, so just, like, little things like that. I'm always trying to figure out, like, why things happen. And I think that's just, like, just me, like, always wanting to get better. But I think for fighters and for competitive athletes, your ego, like, especially being a champion, it's fed so much. Like, what's up, champ? Boom, boom, boom. Her coming from China, it's fed so much. You believe you're unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, so when something dramatic happens, like, you get it knocked out, like, you need to figure out, like, you need to justify it. Like, you need to blame Chris Weidman's broken leg on why you got knocked out. And, you know, Zhang, I'm sorry, but, like, you know, maybe you need to work on staying in the zone and not unfocusing. Like, you know, if that would have happened, I would have turned the screens off and I would have focused on my fight and not even watched it. I wouldn't have even gave him daps on the way out.
Yeah.
You know, I would have been so focused on my fight because, you know, maybe this would be a great lesson for her that, like, you can't lose that focus. But... you know, on the other side of things, Rose is a champ, and Rose was that was her night, and she had beautiful technique.
It was a leg kick, was, right?
No, it was a head kick. Left high head kick.
That's right.
And are they getting a rematch, or what did they do?
I don't know. Probably most likely they're bringing this up. I think they probably are on the docket for a rematch.
Yeah. I bet she's begging for a rematch. Oh, yeah. She's begging for it.
That'd be a great fight, too. I'd love to see him run it back.
I would like to, you know, like, even though, like, it was so quick and you – moving on to the next one, like, it's hard to give her another chance. I know I would be pissed, like,
yeah,
I gotta fight her again, like,
I know.
But at the same time, I think us as fans would love to see a little bit of a longer fight and see how that plays out.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. The excuse doesn't hold any weight. You know, sometimes when there's an excuse like, oh, I had a fracture in my leg coming to the fight or something, maybe those are real excuses that could change up the fight. But her reaching for this mental state she was in coming into the match,
I don't buy it.
I don't buy it. And you're on the other side of the octagon, you got Rose, who's one of the top female mixed martial artists in the world. That's why you lost that fight. She is a deadly fighter. So I wish you would just give more kudos to Rose and no excuses. And I bet she's given a lot of kudos to Rose as well. She's a very respectful, great fighter, very fun to watch. So kudos to both ladies. Let's see them get back in there and get at it again.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the last topic. We've got UFC is now a public company, so quarterly they have to post their revenue. And so they're on pace for this year to do $1.1 billion in top line sales. $1 billion. So we all know UFC is a lot of people think about UFC revenue. They think about UFC pay-per-views, which does probably equate to 60 or 70% of that revenue. That's a large part of their business. But they also sell millions of merchandise at UFCstore.com. They own dozens of UFC gyms that have hundreds, thousands of members that they get revenue through. They have UFC Fight Pass that pulls in monthly millions in monthly revenue. So they have a lot of legs to this entity. They also have about, you know, 9 other promotions that they own, Invicta and all these other promotions that are pulling in top line revenue as well. So massive company, huge revenue, but this is a big statement because the previously earnings of last year ended up being at about $650 million. So they're predicting almost doubling the size of the company in 1 year. Now, Endeavor took over. They became a public entity. They got a lot more cash on hand. They're building PIs in China. They're building one in Mexico. They're looking all over the world. They're expanding the UFC gyms like crazy. Yeah. Fight Pass is growing like crazy. They're trying to do more pay-per-views. They're trying to hit over 50 events next year. They're going to hit over 40 this year. So they are just growing out the seams. And the big knock is fighter pay, right? And that's expected to be at about 18%, which is up. It's been going up by about 2% every year. But in comparison to the NFL, who's 50-50, the MLB is 51% to the players, 49% to the organizations. And there's other organizations that are like 40-60, right? So what's the common denominator here? They're all about a partnership between the athletes. Some are a little bit more to the organization, just, you know, by 5 or 10%, which maybe they can justify those fees. This is extremely lopsided and 82% to the company, 18% to the fighters. So, Chris, back over to you. First question is, what do you think about the promotion doubling in size over the past year? You know, Dana and the powers to be at the UFC are very happy about that. And then what do you think about them, you know, kind of bathing in their riches and still fighter pay isn't to where it should be?
Yeah, like seeing how the company is run, like behind the scenes, they're a well-oiled machine. They have everything you can think of. They have every corner covered, and it's a huge company. And like you said, like after Endeavor took over the ESPN, all the stuff, the company is just, it was already the fastest growing sport. Now it's even a faster growing sport. Yeah. Like it's even like going harder,
yeah.
You know, and especially I think with the growth of social media and Instagram, like it's even taken off even more, and all these other social media outlets as well. And then the fighters are walking advertisement for the UFC. Exactly. Like, look at me, I'm wearing UFC pants, like all my stuff, like, yeah. You know, working all the corners that you're like, I constantly getting UFC gear. So like I'm wearing and repping UFC. So they know how to advertise. They know how to market, and they're a well-oiled machine. Now, talking about fighters' pay, like it really it hurts my soul, because I think you know, being a fighter in the past and seeing how much I got paid, and seeing somehow these other guys get paid compared to what some of these other professionals are getting paid, like it's not fair. Like especially the risk we put ourselves at compared to some of these other guys.
Crazy.
Like some of these guys who play baseball that are not even getting playing time, but they're getting paid more than me on a year salary. Or whatever it is. So
$450,000 a year minimum for baseball.
Yeah, and they're probably not even playing. Or they might play a couple innings or something, right?
Yeah.
But they're not risking getting concussed, or they're not risking getting their leg broken in half. They're not risking getting your arm broken. Yeah. I really want to see the UFC pay their fighters more. You know, like I don't know what it's gonna take, because they don't like people talking about it.
Oh, they hate it.
They put a stomp on it. And if you talk about it, they don't fight you. And they put you on the bench. So
especially for these lower level guys, right? Who it's like they can't make an impact in the media. And I'll never forget when Donald Cerrone was about to go over to the side and representing the fighters and fighter pay. Yeah. They have like a union type that's organizing to represent the fighters. And Dana reached out to him. Dana said this publicly. He said he was going to go try to represent against UFC. I've covered medical bills for him. He asked me for your advice when he was in legal trouble, and I gave him my attorneys at no cost. Dana listed off like these 5 favors he did to Donald. And Donald wants to go represent against me, against us? I don't think that's wise, but do what you want. Donald saw that interview. The day later, he left that fighter union that was being organized and said, I can't represent you guys. And, you know, Donald's making a couple $100,000 to fight. The UFC has got his back a couple times. Dana brought up these moments. So don't. That's what's going on. Dana is taking it like a personal diss if you're trying to fight for fighter pay, which is really sad. And, you know, the top 5% of the fighters are the ones that are getting paid big-time money, okay? The Jorge Masvidal is, like, making $750,000 per fight, right? And then if he wins, he's making more. And then he's getting pay-per-view buys. Okay, now Dustin Poirier is in the millions. You know, these legacy guys like Damian Maia and stuff, they're on a $250,000 pay. Like, these guys are – the guys that can really make a difference by helping represent the fighters, they're getting cashed out. So it's, their thought is, hey, I don't want to, you know – bite the, what is it, what's the saying? Bite the
hand that feeds
hands me. That feed me. Like, I'm on my way out. I don't want anything bad. These other guys that are making 10 grand a fight, 10 grand a win, they speak up and they could get cut.
Yeah.
You're out. So, yeah, how is this? My thought is it's always going to take one of these top 10 guys, like a Khabib, like a Peter Yan.
Yeah.
Some of these guys that the UFC is really high on and that they can't pull their side with throwing money at them to represent the fighters and to really push for change.
It's got to be. It's got to be either a former champ or two, somebody who has a lot of followers, who's got a lot of pull, a lot of, a big fan base, and then get a great legal team behind them or something. I don't know how it all works. Maybe get the commission behind them. But it's just... I want to see people get paid more, man. Like, especially we were just talking about these numbers, and it's just going to get more and more. Let's pay these guys. Like, they deserve it.
Yeah, I agree. And what a lot of people don't know out there is that these fighters get their show pay, their win pay, and you think, oh man, they're going to make 20 grand, and if they win, they make 20 grand, and then they could get fired the night. But, you know, you have your corner, you have your nutrition, you have your gym you're working at, you're driving that gym and paying gas. Who knows if you have another job, or you might be banking on this for your life. So there's all these expenses. And so it doesn't just, when you see a fighter's making 50 grand, they're not just throwing 50 grand in their bank account. That has margin in it. And so
30% goes to taxes.
Yeah. And then taxes is a whole other thing. So I'm surprised the UFC doesn't help their fighters form LLCs and corporations to kind of negate some of these taxes, because I know fighters are getting killed on taxes out there. And if they're not doing it right, they're going to set themselves up to be attacked later on by the IRS, which no one wants to deal with. Most stressful thing. And Misha Tate came out, and this is a particular situation because Misha Tate is extremely wealthy, got paid out, was a former UFC champion, got paid out big money to go over there and be a president at one championship. So she's got money. She came back to the UFC. She gets paid $200,000 to fight. And she said, in this last training camp, I spent 70% of my pay, $140,000, on my training partners, my corner men, my nutrition. And she said she's felt the best she's felt in her whole career, blah, blah, blah. So, you know...
I don't know how she spent that much.
Yeah, that's
like,
a lot of
honestly,
money.
Honestly, like, me doing the math in my head, and because I know what these fighters get paid and kind of what goes out in here, $120,000 on your corner. Like, I don't know how much you're paying your corner. Like, let me be a part of your corner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, if you're paying that much out, like, please, like, let's get it. Yeah, but, yeah, like, and I know nutrition, like, man, I don't know how much your nutritionist and food people were charging her. So if you take 30% from 200,000, you know, that's what I'm not.
The she said, after taxes, 70% went to paying her team, buying the right foods, training gear. So 70% of 100 is.
So 60 grand goes to taxes. Let's just say 60 grand goes to taxes.
And so that leaves 80 grand left that she says she spent.
Yeah.
And so she said she made 60 grand, 80 grand was also spent.
Fuck.
So, you know, not everyone, you know, Connor says he's investing $250,000 into his camp, but again, you know, he's making 10 million plus to fight. Yeah. So it computes for him. These other guys have to be crafty. They can't, of course they'd want to invest in their camp and these big high cost nutritionists and flying people in as training partners and all this crazy stuff. But you know, you got to do it the right way. Now, Misha said she's not like everyone else in the UFC. She doesn't care about the money she gets paid. As a matter of fact, she says she's going to keep this up. And her goal is to win the belt back.
It's investing in yourself in the program. Like, it shouldn't be about how much you invest in yourself. If you're getting the results you want to get, it shouldn't matter because the investments play down in the long term. Like, so if she's got to invest all this money in herself and her team, and then she gets a belt again one day,
the sponsors are gonna go,
these were
wild,
great investments, right? Those investments for your training and for your self development were key. And sometimes that's what it takes. You have to invest in yourself in the program to get to where you want to be.
And those big championship fights and those big sponsors that come when you become a champ, I think will tenfold make up for what she's spending here. All right, I think we'll wrap there. Thanks, everyone, for watching the MMA Rundown brought to you by FanDuel. Please don't forget to like this video, subscribe to our channel. Thank you for everyone listening out there in podcast land. We'll see you next time.
See ya.